Hey there, Quajo here, and if you haven't heard my voice, I'm the new host of the Art of Online Business. Quick update on my new offer. I did not expect the initial launch spots to sell out so fast. I'm talking about Facebook Ad Setup to Success, which is one-on-one Facebook ads coaching for the driven course creator from me, three Zoom calls within a month, and unlimited support in between so that you can run your lead generation campaigns, your launch campaigns, your SLO, self-liquidating offer funnels, exactly like I would, getting all my tips and tricks and strategies, plus just unlimited support inside of Slack or Voxer, or one lady's even doing it from inside of Messenger, with screen recordings, Loom recordings, this sort of thing, questions. This is what I'm doing, but all those limited spots at the initial launch price, they are gone. And I just wanted to explain that out of integrity to the people who took those first spots. The price has gone up, and there's one spot, maybe two, if I do some scheduling jujitsu for May. Otherwise, we're booking into June. You can click on the link in the description below to find out more, or you can go to theartofonlinebusiness.com/call if you need that kind of one-on-one Facebook help. All right, back to the episode.
What do you get when you combine simplified digital marketing, proven ROI strategies, and Metallica blasting from his headphones? You get Rick Mohl ready, of course. So strap in, grab your bulletproof coffee, and get ready, because this is the art of paid traffic. Here's Rick.
What is up, my friends? Welcome back to the Art of Paid Traffic podcast. I'm your host, Rick Mulready. How's it going? If my voice sounds different from the last episode, this is the voice of not getting any sleep. This is the first episode that I've done since I had my baby girl. And I'm so energized to be back with you, recording new episodes for you. The last six or seven shows were all batched back in mid-November because I did not want you going without any episodes and content here on the show. I want to make sure that you were taken care of around this time. I kind of planned on coming back and getting back into the swing of things in my business here in late January. And I'm recording this on the 28th, January 28th. So life has changed a bit now that I have a newborn. It has been so much different than I ever expected. And it was so much harder. It's been so much harder than I was prepared for. And it totally, totally threw me for a loop. Everything from the physical side to things of not getting any sleep, et cetera, to the mental side, to the emotional stuff. Man, I was not ready for any of it. I thought I was, but from the day that we went into the hospital to induce, because Amy went 2 weeks past her due date, from that day that we went into the hospital at 11 o'clock on a Thursday night, everything changed. And man, I mean, I read books. I had people, you know, friends and strangers, and actually many of you reach out to me with so many good intentions about, you know, helpful things and tips and strategies and all that stuff like that. Everything was great, but man, it just cannot prepare you for when it actually happens. And it really hit me hard. So I'm starting to talk a little bit more about this, and I shared an Instagram post about this, and the reception was really, really good. People were really happy that I was actually talking about this stuff. So anyway, I'm going to do an episode about it all here on the podcast coming up soon, because I do think it's something that it doesn't get talked about, and I think it's really important to have this discussion. So in that discussion, I'll also be sharing what it's like juggling having a newborn and running a successful business. And in December, we had one of the best months from a revenue perspective in the business in December. And I didn't work a day in December as Maya was born in the middle of the month. So I'm going to be sharing how we did that. We had one of the best months all year in December. I didn't work a day. So that's really what this is all about, right? So be on the lookout for the lessons that I've learned and I'm learning here on the show. I'm going to be talking a lot more about that. So my goal for this podcast here is to help you grow and scale your business through smart online marketing strategies, right? So that you can have a bigger impact and thus a better life. And if you listen to the episodes in December that I did, on a few of those episodes, I mentioned that I think it's really important to recognize all the complementary areas to marketing, right, that help you grow your business. So in addition to paid traffic, in addition to online marketing, there are really, really important areas like mindset and positioning and building your influence for. When we had episodes, I covered topics like mindset and positioning in 2018. I'm going to be doing a lot more of that here on the show because, I think it's in an integral part of growing your online business, right? Of course, we talk about paid traffic here and online marketing. I'm also going to be mixing in more of these episodes talking about topics like that. And that's what we're going to be doing today, okay? Each of these skills are super critical that you need to master if you want to grow your business and have a big impact. So speaking of building your influence, that's why on today's episode, I'm super pumped to bring you my friend Julie Solomon. Julie is the host of the Influencer Podcast. It's one of the top 30 podcasts on iTunes Business, where on the podcast, she discusses the trends of influencer marketing and how to build your influence. I'm not just saying this because she's on the show today, but the Influencer Podcast, her show, is one of the few that I do listen to time and time again. It's a really, really good show. Julie's also a New York Times best-selling publicist and an influencer marketing educator. And I asked Julie to come on the show so that she can share her expertise on building influence. So many of you are trying to use Facebook ads to grow your business, which obviously I love, duh, but you're frustrated because they're not working. Well, one reason I often see for ads not working is people haven't done the work to position themselves as a go-to resource in their respective niche, right? Or niche. I'm seeing this more and more. People haven't built that know, like, and trust factor. And that's a critical piece, guys, to making your online marketing work. I have so many conversations with people and they're like, they just want money to fall from the sky, but they don't want to put the work in, right? It doesn't work like that. You've got to build that know, like, and trust factor in conjunction with your online marketing efforts. You've got to build that influence. So that is why I invited Julie on the show today. She's going to be sharing with you strategies for how to build your influence without it being overwhelming, right? And she's going to break it down into answering three simple questions. She's going to give you those three questions and the answers and how you can use these three questions in your business to begin to build that influence in your business and for yourself. So she'll outline all that for you. We also talk about how to get brand deals when you don't have a ton of followers or fans. She breaks down how influencer marketing is changing the marketing game. And I also ask her about the whole negative connotation that we hear these days that's often associated with the term influencer online. And she shares her thoughts, and her perspective really blew me away. I recently watched that documentary on Netflix about the Fyre Festival. I don't know what rock I was living under in early 2017, but I didn't hear anything about that. But I saw it on Netflix and I watched it and I was like, damn, like crazy stuff, crazy. But anyway, I brought that up to her and I asked her about, you know, the whole negative connotation that's often associated with influencer or being an influencer. So she shares her perspective on that. We talk about how to equate return on investment as an influencer. We talk about why brand awareness is such a problem for so many people online today and how to fix it, all that and a whole lot more that we dive into with Julie. Now, before we dive into it with her, one of the biggest challenges I hear from new Facebook ad managers and online experts who are running Facebook ads is they're overwhelmed with all the stats, right, inside of Ads Manager. You get your ads running, but then you don't know how to read the numbers and metrics in order to make smart decisions with your ads. You don't know what ads to kill or leave alone or scale. And not knowing how to diagnose and troubleshoot your ads can mean the difference between you're wasting money and you're making money on your Facebook ads. Well, that's why I put together my 60-second diagnosis checklist. This is how to make quick sense of your Facebook ad stats so that you can scale smartly. I've also put together an accompanying video that walks you through everything in the checklist as well. And you can access both the checklist and the video when you go to rickmulready.com/troubleshoot. Okay. In the PDF and in the video, I'm going to show you what stats I recommend looking at for various objectives. Okay. How to create a simple custom report with those stats, what all the stats mean, key benchmarks for these stats so that you can troubleshoot and optimize your ads accordingly, and more. I'll be honest, it takes time to master troubleshooting your ads, and I liken it to an art. Ding, 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 the art of paid traffic. But as with everything, with knowledge and experience, you're going to get better and better, right? And my goal is to accelerate your expertise and make it easier for you. Okay, so download your 60-second diagnosis checklist and accompanying video, how to make quick sense of your Facebook ad stats so that you can scale smartly, at rickmulready.com/troubleshoot. Again, it's rickmulready.com/troubleshoot. All right, my friends, without further ado, let's go hang out with Julie Solomon. Julie, welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you on the podcast. How are you doing?
I am doing so well, and I'm so excited and honored to be here and just be able to hang with you for a little while. Like, yeah. that's always a fun day.
I told you right before we got started here that, like, this is just like me and you sitting down for coffee and chatting. I don't have 18 questions that I want to ask you, but I want to get into a couple things, and this is just going to be like me and you for coffee and seeing where this goes. Sound good?
I love it.
Awesome.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Well, we met in person back in, when was that? Was that in, that was at Amy Porterfield's event.
Was
that like October?
I think so. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
In San Diego.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we met in person finally at that event. And shortly thereafter, I was like, I got to have you on the podcast. I love what you're up to. Talking about, building an influence and influencer marketing and all that stuff, PR and everything like that. So as we get into it here, why don't you share with AOPT Nation here a little bit about yourself and your background and what you're up to now?
Yeah. So my background really is, traditionally speaking, in PR. I started after college. I'm from Tennessee, originally from Nashville, went to the University of Tennessee, moved to New York over 10 years ago and started in music publicity up there. So I was the assistant to a super powerful woman in the music industry who was the publicist for and still is for Lenny Kravitz, Pink, Maroon 5, Def Leppard, a lot of these just major rock and pop acts. And so I started just hitting the ground running and really learned in 1 year what someone else would learn in 10 years, just being at that high level.
Yeah.
Did music PR for a while. And this was, again, like between 2006 and 2008. So Facebook was around and Twitter was around. MySpace had already come and gone. Instagram did not exist yet. And I actually remember being in line in New York for the first iPhone. And it's so weird to think that that seems like so long ago when really it was like just a decade-ish ago.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't that long ago. But I say that just to kind of give you an idea of, we were still, you know, so to speak, in the traditional landscape of marketing at that point. There were blogs and things like that, but people weren't really using them to monetize as we see it now. So after New York for a few years, I moved back to Nashville, Tennessee, and I started working in-house at Thomas Nelson Publishers, which is one of the top faith-based publishing houses in the world. It's now owned by HarperCollins. And so kind of started
doing... Isn't that Michael Hyatt?
It is.
Okay,
Mike
cool.
was the CEO when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started working with, you know, some of the major thought leaders in our industry. I got to work with Dave Ramsey on a number of his books, Max Licato. I was part of a book called Heaven is for Real, which broke all of these insane publishing records at the time, which after that book, HarperCollins was like, oh, hey, we want to buy you, Thomas Nelson, because you're doing really good work.
Right.
So at that time, Mike Hyatt ended up transitioning out to do what he does now. And a new CEO came in, and I stayed there for a little bit. But then around that time, I actually left with another woman who worked there, and we started our own book publicity firm. So this was probably now 2013. I was doing that. And then on the personal side of my life, I had met my husband. We got married. My husband is 15 years older than me and has lived in LA since 1989 as he is an actor. And so I knew that if we were going to live together, that I couldn't live in Nashville and him live in LA. So I moved to LA and then quickly found myself in a new city barefoot and pregnant, trying to figure out, okay, I'm doing this book PR thing and I've been doing it for a while, but like kind of what's next, right? Like how do I meet people? How do I get out here? How do I start networking? And at the time I really started noticing in Los Angeles that this, what is now this idea of influencer marketing was starting to become a thing. And I specifically saw it with YouTubers and with bloggers. So you would have, you know, fitness bloggers or fashion bloggers or beauty YouTubers essentially monetizing their platform and monetizing it pretty well through this avenue. But there was another vast percentage of people who were trying to essentially break the wall and become this 1% that they were seeing. And so that's where I kind of found a little nugget, because I started thinking, well, what if I start blogging and kind of figure out the ropes of the blogging, but then use my expertise of pitching to start acquiring brand deals for myself? So that's what I did. And I didn't have a lot of followers and I didn't know a lot of people here, but that's kind of how I used my skill set of pitching to kind of break that wall, get in front of people, meet the people that I needed to know, really figure out what the brand's goals were and how I could essentially, you know, provide for them a strong ROI based on what they were needing. And so from that, it was kind of ended up being a case study of sorts. I became a lifestyle blogger. I had my child. I would talk about various things from motherhood to lifestyle, to wellness, to what have you. And then that's when I really started figuring out, because women were coming to me, not for my motherhood tips, but they were like, how are you getting these brand deals? Like, I have 100,000 followers and you have 50, you know, less than 10,000 followers and you're making, you're monetizing more than I am.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, okay, so what these women need are not me giving them more tips on motherhood. What they need is the skill set. So from there, I got into the world of online education and online programs and courses. I started, I kind of rebranded my blog to be more of a resource for bloggers. And I started, you know, free, you know, any kind of free access that I could give them for content on marketing, PR, how to pitch themselves, how to network, that sort of thing. And then once I started really warming the audience up to that and kind of attracting who that woman was, I created my pitch program about 2.5 years ago. And then from there, it kind of just took off into the business that I now am in, which is online courses. And I have a podcast and I don't even do book publicity anymore. It kind of just evolved with the industry evolving.
Let's not gloss over that podcast of yours. I know you just kind of like gently just drop that in there. But guys, Julie's influencer podcast is amazing. Very highly ranked on iTunes. Amazing show. Great content. I'm a listener myself. Tell us about that. Like, so you just said 2.5 years ago where you get into the courses and stuff like that. When did the podcast launch? And, you know, how have you seen so much success on it? I mean, obviously, I'm talking more about getting the word out, that sort of thing, because the content is on point. More about like, how do we, you know, how are you marketing it? That sort of thing.
Yeah. So the courses came about in 2016, or my first course, if you will, which is Pitch It Perfect. It's a course on pitching.
Yep.
And, you know, after that, just kind of through my being the high fact finder that I am and my surveying and my data mining, I was finding that there was still more that people really wanted to dive into. And specifically when it came to this idea of what is an influencer? How do I become an influencer? If I'm a brand, how do I work with an influencer? How do we kind of equate an ROI with an influencer? There is no union. There is no form of protection. There is no rule book to this new landscape. It's kind of like the wild, wild west. So how do we navigate this? And that's really where the idea of the podcast came about, that, you know, I started, essentially, I tend to kind of teach things that I want to learn myself or things that I needed to learn at some point that I started to kind of have to search out and seek. And so I started thinking, like, this is all of the stuff that people come to me for that I either know from my experience or stuff that I've just had to research and figure out and learn throughout my own trial and error of being an influencer and then teaching influencers. So that's where the podcast came about. It launched in April of 2017. And I have to say that I think a lot of, you know, part of the success, if you will, or the reach, if you will, of the podcast is really timing. A lot of people ask me, like, it seems like it just blew up overnight. How did that happen? And I want to say that it was interesting that from April of 2017 into August of 2017, podcasts just in my, what's the word that I'm looking for? My category alone mm-hmm. had like doubled.
Yeah.
In just 3 or 4 months. So I think for me, it was A, the content that I was talking about there. There's a lot of podcasts out there on marketing or growing a business or even online marketing, but there wasn't really a podcast out there specifically talking about influencer marketing in the way in which I talk about it.
Yeah.
And then I also think that I got on the podcast platform literally right before it really started to get saturated. And so it just allowed people to have a little bit more time to find it.
Yeah.
I just think that word influencer also is one that people search a lot because yeah. we'll ask people like, how did you find the podcast? And they were like, oh, well, I literally searched blogging in iTunes and it came up or influencer in yeah. iTunes and it came up or influencer marketing or what have you. So I think that it's a bunch of things that kind of pulled together and then really the word of mouth. It's interesting how, you know, this influencer world, I mean, there's millions and millions and millions of them of influencers or people who want to become influencers and they are seeking that information. And so I think a lot of word of mouth of like, have you heard this podcast? It's really good. I'm learning this, that and the other. I've grown a business from it, what have you. So it's a culmination of those things. And really how I market it, we don't run any Facebook ads to it. It is literally through my newsletter. It's through word of mouth and it's through social media as of 2019.
I love it. I love it. Do you? I have so many questions there I want to unpack from what you just said. The first thing, do you think the term influencer has a negative connotation these days?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, and it's interesting because it's kind of one of the reasons why I specifically chose, mm-hmm. like intentionally chose to use that word in my business and in my brand, because I think that it's power, right? Yep. In some cases. And just like with power, it can be used for good or it can be used for bad.
Sure.
So I think that it's really in how you see it. For me, I believe that influence is really about creating and kind of owning that magic within you that allows you to create and perform and share in a really impactful and connective way. And so to me, that's a very positive thing.
Totally.
However, just like with sales or just like with power, it can be sleazy. It can be slimy. It can be negative. And so I think that it's getting mindful of the distinction of those two things. And then someone choosing, you know, how am I going to use influence for the greater good?
I love it. It's so well said. Like I've had a lot of time now that I'm back in the swing of things here in the business after taking almost 2 months off with the prior to the baby coming and then after the baby coming, I had a lot of time on my hands to watch different things on Netflix. And I was watching different things on like, you know, influencer documentaries. I watched this, the whole Fire Festival documentary mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. Netflix. And, you know, just the more and more stuff that's being put out there, it has this, from my viewpoint, has this negative connotation to it. So I'm so happy to hear you distinguish your viewpoint on that and the approach that you're taking and the angle that you're approaching this whole subject and topic. And I love that even more so because thus your audience is going to view it that way as well and approach it for their business and themselves in that way.
And that's my hope, because I think that really a lot of times when even people claim to be or identify themselves as an influencer, the first question that I always pose to them is, well, what are you influencing?
Yeah.
Because you can really think of it, you know, what does it mean for someone to be an influencer? And it's even quite interesting, like if you get pulled over for drinking and driving, right? What do they say? You're under the influence. Mm. When you get sick with something, if you have the flu, you have influenza. So you can be influx and influenced by something that can be this really negative energy, if you will. But it really goes back to each and every person defining to them, what does influence mean to me? Does it mean, you know, riding in private jets and showing my Mercedes-Benz on my Instagram photos all day or doing bro marketing until I want to vomit all over myself on Facebook? Or
what's bro marketing?
Oh, man. Yes. Bro marketing is what I would call call a general term, and I think you can actually Google it now.
I'm gonna Google
yes,
it.
Yes, but it is, and I mean, Rick, from your background with Facebook ads, you're gonna know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's that quintessential, let's 10x your income while I stand in front of my jet Facebook ad.
Got it.
Flying
okay.
All over the world.
Yes.
Billionaire.
The funny thing is as you said that, I had all these examples of what you're talking about and those people pop into my head.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. And so, but at the same time, that is an influence, right?
Yeah,
that is definitely in this landscape. That type of influence is there. The Fyre Festival. I mean, that single-handedly shows you how influential these models were to essentially, help this person who I don't even think he knew what he was getting into because he was just a kid.
Yeah.
But fraudulently, kind of mess these people over, you know? And so it can be used for so many different things, but then you have people out there who are enacting so much positive change and who are influencing, just beautiful global amazing things too. So
now you mentioned earlier that when you were first starting out, you were getting these brand deals without a ton of followers, and mm-hmm. These other influencers or other companies were saying, "Hey, like I have all these followers, I have all these fans, I have a pretty big quote unquote influence online here, but I'm not getting these deals." How were you doing it at that time with quote unquote so few, such a smaller, if you will, online following?
Yeah. So I think a lot of times, and I'm glad that we're going to talk about this because so many people focus way too much on their following number, right?
Yeah.
And they'll come to me and they'll say, I don't have enough followers, or, the algorithm is ruining my life. It's like standing outside my door just waiting to, burn my house down. And I'm just like, your followers is not your problem. The algorithm is not your problem. It's your brand awareness is really your problem. Mm. Either people can't clearly understand how you can help them, they don't trust you, or not enough people know about you and about what it is that you do. However, brand awareness, and really to me that's influence, is a fixable problem. So the way in which I saw that is that I really used it as an opportunity instead of a problem. Instead of focusing on the fact that I didn't have as many followers as someone else or whatever that was, I thought to myself, what is the one thing that I do have that could help this brand or could support this brand or could make this brand be potentially curious about working with me? And for me, that was my ability to pitch and my ability to leverage media, other influencers, people that I knew through various networks and connections with these brands. But you have to get really clear on what problem is it that you're solving, and how are you going to break that wall? So I think a lot of times for people, they try to do all the things, right? Like, I've been trying this, I've been trying that, I'm doing this, and I've got my followers here, and I'm doing Instagram stories, and I'm doing IGTVs, and I'm doing and I'm doing all of this stuff with my brand, and I offer all of these things, but I can't seem to get a brand to want to work with me. Mm-hmm. And I always go back to a great example, which is Amazon. What did Amazon as a company first start doing? They sold books, right?
Yep.
They sold one thing, books, and they became the absolute flipping best at selling books. And that allowed them to break that wall from going from basically unknown to known. And once they were able to break that wall and become known and, really allow for people to understand how they could help them, allow people for them to trust them, and allow for people to know enough about what it is that they did, then they could go off and do a multitude of things. And now Amazon sells literally everything under the sun.
Yeah.
But it had to start with that one thing. And so for me, I always go back to that what I figured out, that one thing for me was pitching. So I was like, I'm going to become the absolute flipping best at this that I possibly can, not only for myself, but that's going to be my service to my community. And I'm going to be known as this one thing. And then once I am really known for this one thing, and I've got the know, like, and trust, and I've got the social proof to back it up, then I can go and build the influence out from there. I can go and do podcasts. I can go and create more courses. I can go and do things like that. But I had to break the wall first.
Do you enjoy the other things more because you bring up a really good point here as far as like you're quote unquote getting people in the door by focusing on the pitching first. Mm-hmm. Like, look, if you want to pitch, Julie Solomon is the person to go to for this. And so you get them in the door, quote unquote, you're helping them with this. Once you do that, then you're able to, if you will, offer these other things to them. Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy the other things more than the pitching part, than like that program? And if you don't want to answer this, that's okay. I'm just like, you bring up a really, really interesting point here.
Yeah, and you do as well, because this really comes back to passion, right? And yep. This is where I find a lot of people get stuck, right, in their heads, because they're like, well, I'm passionate about all these things. Like, I want to do all of these things and I can't pick one. Or what if I pick one and it's not the right one? Yes. Or what if I end up not really liking it that much? And so I always go back to first thing, like, your engagement comes from action, not thought. So the more that you keep thinking it, the more that you're just going to stay in that loop, and you're not going to, you just have to act. You mm-hmm. have to just do something, test it out, see if it works. For me, that was the pitching. And do I love pitching? Like, do I wake up every day and it's like, I get to pitch today? No, not necessarily, right? Like, I do love doing the podcast probably more than I love doing the pitching. But for me, it went back to me asking myself the question, what is something that I know that I can do and I can do well, right? Which is pitching, because that's going to keep my confidence up. It's going to give me the resilience that I need to keep going. But is also at the same time a low barrier of entry for me, right? It's not something that I'm going to have to learn a lot about. It's not something that I'm going to have to essentially like beat doors down to kind of get through. And because I had 10 years of experience of pitching, that was a low barrier of entry for me. It was something that I was passionate enough about. And it was something that I could really help people find a result from. And so kind of understanding that part of it, I was like, well, then this is a good thing to start with, at least to test out and see what happens. So I think for a lot of those who can't kind of pick what their one thing is, it's not about doing something that is the absolute favorite thing that you can mm-hmm. possibly think of. It's about doing something that you love enough to wake up and do every day, essentially, at least for a certain amount of time, because passions change, right?
Sure. Like, yep.
I don't even really pitch that much anymore, but I had to at least start with that so I could lay the foundation, and then I could step into the other passions that I had.
Yeah.
So it's about picking one that you like and love enough to be able to wake up and do every day, because and something that's going to be a low barrier of entry for you so you don't get burnt out. Because there's one thing to really like something or to really love something. But if you don't have the endurance and resilience to back that up, you're going to have a really hard time competing with the people that do.
Man, I'm just processing all that, because that's really well said. And because and I'm thinking about it also, everything you just said is so common. I hear it all the time. I've felt that myself in my own business over the years. I think a lot of people get caught up in like, all right, you know what? I'm focusing on this one thing or whatever. I'm really good at this one thing, but I'm starting to have interest in other things as well. And I may be afraid to go focus on those things or introduce those things because I'm afraid I'm known as this one thing, or I'm known for this one thing. And they feel like they're going to be pigeonholed, you know, for that one thing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's, you're only going to be pigeonholed if you stay in that loop of feeling that way. I mean, I could have essentially said that, like, well, I'm only going to be known as the pitch person if I do this.
Yep.
But what it actually ended up doing is opening so many other doors, and kind of going back to Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, they sold books. That's all that they did. That's all that they sold. And now they literally sell any and everything that they possibly want. And you even see it with, you know, celebrities. It's like when you think of Julianne Hough, for example, right? Mm-hmm. She came out 10, however many years ago it was, as a dancer on Dancing with the Stars. That's what she did. And then once she was able to become known and really kind of break the social consciousness, break into the social consciousness, she was then able to do movies, to sing, to produce, to write, to really do whatever she wanted to do.
Mm.
And so I think that, you know, even looking, you see that Jennifer Lopez, you know, she started out as a dancer, you know, on In Living Color 25 years ago. And now she is an empire.
Yeah.
But she had to break that wall. So that's where it kind of goes into, how can I break the wall that's going to be a low barrier of entry for me that I am passionate enough to keep doing in order to break the wall? And then once I break that wall, once I become known, then I can start really diving into these other things that, you know, pique my interest and that I'm passionate about.
A lot of the audience here that, a lot of my audience that listens to the show here, they're trying to make ads work for their business. You know, they're either not getting any traction yet, or they're starting to get some traction, but they don't really know how to really continue that momentum. So we talk a lot about that here on the show and just building that business, but yet so many are doing that while not having yet grown that influence. Or being positioned, or positioning themselves as that influencer. So we've been talking a lot about, you know, how to do this. Can we kind of break down maybe a few? Are there some concrete things or concrete steps that, or strategies that people that could share that people could do to build that influence for their business?
Yeah. The first thing that I think that people need to really get clear on, and this took me a long time to get clear on as well, is what problem do you solve? Like really getting clear on that. And it's interesting because I used to say like, oh, well, the problem that I solve is connection, right? Like I help people connect. Okay, but Julie, connection's not a problem. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. Connection isn't a problem. So what problem do I really solve? And so it's really thinking about, you know, what really makes you upset? You know, what fires you up? Like what really makes you angry? What makes you sad? What makes you sad for other people? And so when I really started diving into this, I realized that the problem that I was really solving for people was powerlessness. That they felt so powerless to being able to think and feel for themselves, being able to empower themselves to create the business and life that they wanted. And that could come down to something as small as the algorithm's ruining my life, right? I'm powerless to the algorithm, or I can't seem to grow no matter what I do. I'm powerless to this growth. You know, nothing works for me. I'm powerless to understanding and to learning new things. And so when I got kind of clearer on really figuring out the problem that I solved, then I was able to figure out, okay, how can I be a solution provider for this problem? And how does that solution align with something that I am actually passionate about? So I think that that's a great place to start. And then you need to also think about, and this kind of goes back to that low barrier of entry piece, what do you like learning about? Because if it's something, for me, I'll give you a great example. One of the reasons actually why I started a podcast was because it was a low barrier of entry for me. I ended up getting really clear on what my zone of genius was and was not. And I knew that my zone of genius was not video, it was not lighting, and it was not post-production editing. So doing what I do on the podcast on, say, something like a YouTube platform would have not worked for me. I would have got burnout because it would have been something that I didn't like learning about. It wouldn't have been in my zone of genius. And I would have started to get really unconfident, to get really frustrated, and I would have probably quit. And so I knew that I had to figure out what was something that I could keep at that I would actually be somewhat interested in learning about. And for me, that was the podcast. And so getting clear on what I liked learning about, and I think that's for other people, and then getting really clear on what would people be willing to either, you know, to invest in with you, and that could be their time or their money. What will people buy in that you are essentially servicing to them that is going to keep them interested in coming back for more and keep them interested in sharing what you do with other people for free?
You mentioned the podcast there and why you chose the podcast. What I'm hearing from you is don't pick 16 different platforms to be on.
Pick
something that you are interested in that, you know, that you feel highlights your strengths and double down on that.
Exactly. And that's, and you know, and that kind of goes back to like breaking through the wall, right? Mm-hmm. And like really getting clear on what you can manage. Because when we first start out, a lot of us, we don't have a budget. You know, we're a one person show. A lot of us are, you know, start these things kind of as our side hustle while we work our full-time job. And so you can't expect going into it to, a lot of people can't essentially hire a team of people to help them with it. So you do have to really think about what is this one thing that I can essentially manage myself that's going to keep me excited, that's going to keep me curious, that I can do, and not trying to do all of the things. And if you feel like you need to be on all the things, for example, I have a website. I have a blog, but the podcast is now essentially the blog. I haven't written a new piece of blog content in probably 2 years, mm-hmm. but we have blog posts come out once a week that are in the form of the podcast content because we have a podcast come out every week.
Yeah.
So that kind of allowed for me to still be present on the blog while not having to create twice as much.
Yeah.
You know, we have a newsletter. I personally like to write. I like to build a newsletter. I like to connect with a community through that platform. So I do that. And then I have social media. I'm on Facebook, but I do not manage that. I am not a Facebook. We really, you know, primarily use it for Facebook Live videos and Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. I have someone who manages that because that's not my zone of genius.
Yeah, yeah,
like me trying to do my Facebook ads would be like me trying to do my accounting. Could I do it? Maybe. Is it going to be done correctly? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I think it's getting really clear on where do I absolutely need to be and what is my zone of geniuses in those areas. And then letting everything else go. Yeah. I'm not on YouTube and that's fine. I'm not active on Twitter and that's fine. I'm not super active on Facebook and that's fine. I'm mostly active on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then I have the podcast and then we have the newsletter and then our blogs that are part of the podcast and that's it.
And you can make those decisions because you've gotten clear on the problem that you solve, the mm-hmm. solution that you are providing to solve that problem, mm-hmm. and you've decided, okay, I'm not going to do, you know, 18 different platforms here. I'm going to do what lights me up, what I'm good at, what I want to learn about, and using that information to determine where your audience is.
Exactly.
Where are those people that you want to help? Okay, exactly. I can be there.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was going to say. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that because that's why testing is so important because I could have done the podcast and tested it out. And if my audience, if she wasn't there, then it wouldn't have caught on. And then I could have been like, okay, well, you know, maybe we do need to test something else out. I wouldn't have put one episode out and then made that decision. You know, I would have waited for probably 90 days to maybe, you know, 6 months to make that decision to really get the data in. But I would stay open and flexible to that, to receive that. But it is, it's also getting clear on who is your audience and how do they like to consume the content in which you create.
What would you say to that person from a mindset perspective who wants to build this business? I'm kind of laughing as I say this because, I mean, it's like banging my head up against the wall. I have these conversations with students and just people in general a lot that they want this business. They want this online business to grow and they want to be an influencer, but they don't want to do this work. You know, they don't want to get them to put themselves out there to, again, position themselves as the go-to in whatever niche that they're serving. They don't want to do that work. But yet they're like, I just want to run ads. And that's all I want to do. And, you know, let the money rain from the sky.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this kind of really goes back to you getting really clear on what business is it that you really want to be in, right? Like, do you want to be here for the long haul? Do you want to create something that, you know, if Facebook were to blow up tomorrow, you could still have it, you know, you could still have it there. It's not contingent on another platform and what that platform does for you. It's really getting clear on like, what business do I want to be in? And do I want to be the absolute flipping best that I can possibly be in that? And I think a lot of times, the only way that you can really answer that is, do I want to be the best at this? Yes or no? And if the question is yes, then you also have to make the decision because you can't have one without the other. How do I get the highest version of myself to show up then?
Mm.
Because you cannot be the best at something if you're not bringing your highest self to that place.
What are some, I know this is going to open up a can of worms, so we'll keep it short here. What are some strategies for doing that? Because I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. I mean, first, and pardon my French, but you got to own your shit.
Yeah.
Like that is the biggest thing that I see with, you know, the difference between quote unquote successful online entrepreneurs and people who are wanting to do it is that they do not want to take responsibility for their own stuff, right? Mm. So let's say, for example, someone buys your program, right, Rick, and they don't get the results. Mm-hmm. They want to blame it on everyone but themselves.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, this didn't work for me. Okay, well, why didn't it work for you? Mm-hmm. I didn't get anything out of this. Okay, well, why didn't you get anything out of this?
Yeah.
This was not what I was expecting. Okay, well, then why did you have an expectation, or what was your expectation?
Yeah.
So really posing those questions back onto yourself is really that responsibility and ownership piece, and really replacing that whole, why is this happening to me? Which again is powerlessness, right? To instead saying, what is this trying to teach me? If you can just reframe that statement to, you know, this isn't working for me, why is this happening to me? To, how can I learn from this? What is this trying to teach me? How can I be more present? And I think a lot of that comes down with expectations. People start to go in with their own assumptions and their own expectations of things and their own preparations of things, that they completely take themselves out of wherever they are presently and consciously.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, well, how can my presence be my preparation? Mm. How can me just being here and being present be my actual preparation for showing up and making this thing happen?
I love it. I love it. I want to finish off with this whole topic of influencer marketing. And we've kind of been talking about it, but not like naming it that during this conversation. But it's really changing the game here. What's the status of, and you know, it, and stuff that I heard throughout 2018 was so many brands just weren't getting influencer marketing. But yet as the year went on, they were starting to realize, oh, you know what? A, this is really is a thing. B, I need to be setting budget aside for this because it's really successful. Mm. Where, like in your mind, where at the beginning of 2019 here, where are we from an influencer marketing perspective and really how it's changing how people, influencers, if you will, and businesses are you know, how is it changing the marketing game for them?
Yeah. You know, I think it's just so ever evolving because we're still at the early, early stages of something. And I think that that's something that we as a generation, because you don't really know what you don't know, right?
Yep.
And I kind of think back to, you know, the industrial industry, right? And the Rockefellers and that kind of stage, that I don't know if those people, that generation at that time, knew that they were on the forefront of something that was literally going to change the trajectory of the rest of the world. And I think that that's what we've kind of been a part of with this whole digital boom that we've seen in the last decade plus.
Yeah.
And specifically with how that relates to influencer marketing is kind of keeping that in mind, that it's always a test. It's always evolving. There's going to be, you know, we'll take Facebook ads, for example. Facebook ads, 18 months ago, you know, were completely different,
yeah, very different
than how Facebook ads are now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that there's still not a place for them. Affiliate marketing, you know, so where you will promote, you could either, you know, promote a course and get a kickback on that, or maybe you work with a brand and promote a product and get a kickback on that. Mm-hmm. That looks different now than it did a year ago. Brand deals look different now than they did a year ago. So I think that it's about being open and flexible to that, while at the same time understanding that we're part of this evolution that is happening in real time, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And giving yourself the space to try things out and test things out. I know I keep going back to that, but that's what I really feel is the key, because that's really, you know, giving yourself the courage to test something out is not about winning or losing or getting something perfect or getting something right. It's about the courage to show up when you can't predict or control the outcome.
Mm. I'm just thinking about that. I mean, really, really well said. I love thinking about it that from that perspective, because I think so many people have kind of been watching the evolution of influencer marketing, quote unquote. And, you know, like I said, there was talk last year about brands not quite understanding the opportunity. Then they were getting into it. Then I was hearing at the end of 2018 that that this is something, this quote unquote trend is something that's going away. But yet I love how you equate it here with the evolution of the internet here. And this is we're part of this whole thing. And it's something that changes all the time. You know, you mentioned Facebook ads, completely different than 18 months ago. And just being a part of this, and as you say, showing up, being present to this and testing different things, that's what's going to be the key for you in order to build that influence.
Yes, because I think that each and every influence is different. What's mm-hmm. going to work for one person is not going to work for another. And that's why you can't equate your success off of someone else's formula. You know, you can learn, right? Yeah. It's like, we know so many, I mean, you're a great teacher in the niche and in what you excel at. Our friend, Amy Porterfield, Marie Forleo, et cetera, et cetera. There's great mentors and leaders in, you know, various industries that you can learn systems and strategies and formulas for, but you and only you are responsible with how you take that education and implement it in your own unique way with your own business. And that's what makes someone uncopyable.
Love it. I want to leave it right there because that is, I think, a perfect way to wrap up this conversation. Really, really good stuff. Like I told you at the very beginning, and like we mentioned here at the beginning of this interview here, guys, I had a couple of points that I wanted to make sure that we touched on. We touched on that and so much more. And I'm so glad that this conversation went where it did, because I think this is super, super, I learned a lot. I've been taking a whole bunch of notes here as we've been talking. And Julie, I just want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your expertise in your experience and what you've done over the past several years and what you're doing now. I think it's awesome. Where can people where can they connect with you? The Influencer Podcast, guys, go subscribe to this show, go download the episodes, go listen to it. Like I said, I have a very short list of podcasts that I listen to, and Julie's is one of them. I'm not just saying that because she's on the show here. Great show, The Influencer Podcast. Where else can people can connect with you, Julie?
Thank you, Rick. I just so appreciate that. Thank you for being such an advocate, for sure. So yes, the podcast, and then my website is juliesolomon.net. So you'll find free resources there. Of course, all the podcast information's there. Our programs that we have two programs, Pitch It Perfect, which we talked about today, and then the Influencer Academy, which teaches people how to essentially start and create an online influence that they're super proud of. And then we have Instagram and Facebook. I tend to be the most active on Instagram. So that is at Jules Solomon, JulesSolomon. And it's the same on all the things.
All the things. Okay. I'll link up all the things in the show notes for the episode here today. Julie, thank you again so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, if you'd like to win a 30-minute strategy session with me, I'd love to hear from you over on Facebook Messenger. All you have to do is give me your feedback on this podcast. And specifically, I'd like to hear what you'd like to hear more of, like topics, guests, style of the show, frequency, length, any ideas that you want to share with me. I want to hear them from you. So to share your ideas and feedback, just simply message me over on Facebook. I've set up a link that will direct you right to Messenger where we can start chatting, rickmulready.com/messenger, rickmulready.com/messenger, let me say that again, rickmulready.com/messenger. And when you message me there with your ideas and feedback, I'm going to pick one person at random at the end of each month to win a 30-minute strategy call with me. We can talk about your Facebook ads or growing your business or online marketing strategy, growing a team, whatever is it that you'd like to talk about. We'll cover it in that strategy session. So shoot me your feedback there and your ideas for this podcast here. I'll pick a winner each month. Thank you so much in advance for your feedback. And again, as always, thank you so much for listening to the show here. I really appreciate you. I don't take your attention lightly. I've got so many great episodes lined up for you coming your way here on the show, including I'm getting back into the quick tip episodes that so many of you message me and say that you love. So stay tuned for all that. And as always, my friends, keep testing your online marketing to find out what works for you and your business, and then do more of what's working. And I'll see you in the next episode.
Don't worry, there's more of Art of Paid Traffic coming soon. If you can't wait for more incredible digital marketing strategies, head over to rickmulready.com. We'll see you next time.
Do you want to avoid the 7 biggest mistakes that burn through course creators' ad money? I see these over and over and over again, and I put them together in a mini email series. This is not fluff. Each of the 7 mistakes, I also have a recorded video tutorial showing you inside of Facebook Ad Manager how to fix those mistakes. This is good, solid, and it will save you money or help you make more money with your Facebook ads. Click down in the show notes below. You'll see the link, and you can go download it right now for free.